test it.
Welcome and greetings. You're listening to Heart of Mind Radio for the New Millennium. I'm Catherine Davis, and this is the Progressive Radio Network, PRN.FM. And on today's program, I wanted to speak with you about some of the internal changes that are going on within our spiritual makeup. And we're living during very interesting times, and I've been examining a lot of what is going on in the world and comparing that to my own direct experience. And I do believe that there is a correlation, and we can begin to look at what's happening and how it is impacting our lives, what changes we may be going through and how that is impacting our lives. And as we look at the environment within which we experience life, we can begin to take a different vantage point, and through that vantage point, providing it is a more expanded vantage point, we can begin to have some sense of how to navigate. And I say navigate because we are really, in a sense, accustomed to doing things from the perspective of being in control. And one of the better ways to navigate is to surrender that control and find the way for each of us individually to tap into a stream of energy, of vitality and life force that is much more empowering than the desire to control a particular situation, because ultimately we don't have that kind of control over the minute-by-minute experience. I think it's a matter of more getting in touch with ourselves as the captain of a ship, or perhaps a navigator of a ship. And we can think of our bodies as being that ship. And our experience in life as in some measure the sea and the air and the medium through which we are navigating. Ultimately, in our current epoch, where we are in the flow of experience, I guess giving it a more historical perspective, we are being faced with navigating a political environment, and we're being faced with navigating a, rather than being a hunter-gatherer type creature, citizen of a more natural environment, we're living in, you know, the concrete jungle, such as it were, but we still have those same basic needs and principles to be the hunter-gatherer. The question is, what are we hunting and what are we gathering? So I do a lot of contemplation in this regard. And one of the things that I have used as a coping mechanism for stress and for feeling better within an experience that is challenging. So one of the things I have always used to cope since my early childhood has been my imagination. So I was basically a child who daydreamed most of the time. Even while in school, I would daydream a lot. I was one of those kids who would be staring out the window, if there were a window. But more often, I would be gazing internally at some self-constructed imaginary scenario. So I'm telling this story because what happens as we move forward, that without realizing, without realizing it, I had actually been developing certain kinds of natural technologies that, if applied appropriately, can begin to flow into the construct of your life existence. But at any rate, there I was, this young girl in school reading books. I enjoyed school. I enjoyed learning. But I was bored, and probably had the diagnosis been available in those days, I might have been diagnosed with attention deficit disorder. But essentially, I was just bored. And so it wasn't very difficult for me to learn history, to learn science, to learn language, not foreign languages, but to understand the construct of language, the English language, and learning how to write and access that language in sophisticated ways. So I was, in many ways, quite comfortable with the curriculum. I just found it boring. And so what I would do is reconstruct scenarios within my own mind. So if I'm reading a book about history and it's telling me about a particular time frame in history, be it some king in Europe or some president in the Americas or some scenario of history or some aspect of science, technology, biology, whatever it was, I would take in that bit of information that was given as part of the class and then construct out of it some different kind of internalized experience. So I would imagine myself within the scene or within the construct of the story. So if I was reading about a scientist having a discovery, I would imagine myself in that laboratory experiencing that, Eureka discovery, or if I was learning about a particular time in history, I would insert myself in an imagination of the experience itself. And as I later began to realize, once I got to later in school, I began to realize that this was a mechanism that I used to learn. It was one of the ways that I was able to learn so efficiently, because it became sort of a multi-dimensional surround sound experience, because I would recreate things in my imagination. And it helped me to learn, and it helped me to have fun in the learning process. But what is more important is that it taught me how completely elastic the imagination is, in the sense that in these imaginings, they were very real, full sensory experiences. So by the time I got to junior high school, I would say, and early high school, you know, I got bored with the whole construct of realities that were being fed to me, and I began to construct my own realities. And so I would imagine whole lifetimes that I would imagine, maybe over the course of the year, going back and forth, growing up, having children, having those children grow up, have grandchildren. Or I would go in and imagine myself as completely different people in completely different worldviews, world places. And then what would happen then is that as I later began to recognize what I was doing, it occurred to me that I was creating things, in the sense that even though it appeared to be totally from my imagination, I would turn around and have some reflection of that imagination inside of my life. So I would imagine a particular person or a particular life scenario, then I might meet someone that reflected that. Or I would imagine a particular sort of global phenomena where I can remember, well, this was pretty early on when I was in grade school, I would begin to think of a scenario in which the world looked very different and people were living in the streets, and I would imagine myself as this person who was trying to figure out how to rescue people or something, you know, putting myself in the hero role. Or I would imagine myself as some kind of business tycoon. And I can remember, years later, seeing the connections of the movement where all of a sudden there were huge communities of homeless people. Or another time, I imagine the whole stocks and bonds and things like that, and I would see these things develop. Or I would imagine different ways of communicating through devices, science fiction things, and then I would see these things develop. Now I never made the connection that I had anything to do with the development, but that my imagination was tapping into something real. And then as I got older, I began to see a lot of writings about how to manifest realities and how to work with the mind in order to create something substantial within your life. And all of these techniques that people use, affirmations and other kind of techniques to develop, construct their realities. And so this whole journey of seeing how the imagination plays into our reality, it became a very real possibility for me, a very real understanding. I'm not saying that I ever really applied any of these tools of manifestation in a big way for material gains or, trying to reconstruct my whole life based on a particular idea or ideology. Primarily, I think, because I didn't know. I didn't know what I wanted. I didn't know what I might want to construct or create. So I most often begin to use the imagination and the powers of the mind as part of healing practices, as part of my growing experience as a healer and working with people, and beginning to recognize that how people can reimagine themselves and reimagine their problems as a way of working through certain issues, and it became a very powerful tool in that regard. So this is really just one flower or one petal of the what I'm speaking of in terms of moving into this new space that we are living in energetically. And so there's a way in which using the imagination in this, but what I hadn't realized until now is how much of our conscious awareness has been programmed or hijacked by constructs, other kinds of controlling constructs. And I look at the education system, the systems of religion, the systems of government, as having degenerated in our current world, and degenerated to a state of being systems of exploitation rather than systems of uplifting society. And in many ways, the medical profession is the same, because everything has been corrupted by profit and greed and moving people into states that will benefit another rather than opening people to a point of benefiting themselves and benefiting the society. So, for instance, our school systems are guiding people into categories of job, like your value as a human being depends on what level of financial gain you can create for yourself and your family. So a certain classification of people are going to be deemed by society as only worth being a cog in the wheel. So you work in Walmart, so you work in McDonald's, so you work in some factory or some other kind of organization, fulfilling some function within that organization, but not having any intellectual or psychological contribution. And in fact, anything that you might contribute by way of your innate creative abilities will be discouraged. And so people get trapped into these little, as being these little cogs in a wheel. And then we have another classification of people whom I would deem as the middle manager class. So for that class distinction, one doesn't really have to have a particular skill. You don't necessarily have to be able to do anything or create anything, but you become the engine or the entity of managing people resources, of being able to keep people in line. So, you know, you see that in the military class, you see that in middle management in corporations, you see it everywhere, of people whose job it is to keep other people in line. And then you have another class of people who generally are people who have inherited a certain level of privilege, be that financial or be that social, being born into a certain privilege, allowing you a certain access to a more expansive education or perhaps more expansive employment opportunities. And I'm not speaking here of racial privilege. I'm speaking more of class privilege. And then beyond that, you have a group of people who probably have been raised or educated or fall into a class of this middle management of managing people resources, managing economic resources. And there's these people often go into political systems because it has that sort of joint quality of being a manager of systems, being a manager of resources, but also having the capacity to fulfill the recognition, the ego needs, the level of appreciation that people enjoy and crave. So we have these people in the political scene who are managers of resources, be it people, economics, or other kinds of resources, but also craving the fame and fortune for themselves. And then beyond that, you have the craft class, is what I call it. It is whom one would consider to have been the wizard in the days of old kingdoms, the one who has the craft, the ability to originate or put into place systems of mind control and systems of resource control and systems of even weather control at this point. So I consider that to be the wizards, the craft class of people, the ones behind the scenes who pull the strings, the Wizard of Oz, if you will, the Wizard of Id, that class of people that have a very long view, and they construct systems that are designed to last for centuries, that are designed to move in stages. Now, I'll give you an example. And the example I know is really one that is race-based, and that would be, you know, the system that created the system of slavery, incarceration in America. So this was a system that started out in recognition of a region of the world that had great resources. Those regions would be the African continent and the American continent. So there were systems set in place to undermine the original inhabitants of those lands. And once that was done militarily, then it had to be done psychologically. So what does the system of slavery do psychologically? It breaks with the knowledge of the past. So in the United States, so-called, people would have been enslaved, brutalized. Children would have been separated from parents, not being able to ascertain their true cultural wisdom, and they become adrift. And then after several hundred years in this degraded situation, as it happened in America, people were liberated for various causes, by various means, by various efforts by many multiplicities of people. So slavery came to an end. Then another system came into place of reconstruction, which was allegedly to help the people, but rather it ended up becoming moving into a system of segregation, you know, black water fountains, white water fountains, black bathrooms, white bathrooms, black schools, white schools. But in that system of segregation, there was still a level of coherency for communities because people had communities in which there were teachers and doctors and lawyers and mothers and preachers and fathers and all living together in one community, sustaining and supporting each other, be it they might be cut off from their original knowledge, they were able to cultivate and develop new abilities, new knowledge, integrate into the world in a new way according to the systems that were existing. And there were many communities flourishing at that time. So then came in the next system once it was recognized that, oh, we have all these communities of unity in that we created through segregation that are thriving and are actually outpacing the overall communities within America. So we have to break that up. So then came in the next system of terrorism, which include organizations like the Ku Klux Klan and other forms of systems that would simply terrorize people. Cities being bombed, the Oklahoma, not the modern bombing, but, you know, Black Wall Street. I'm referring to where, you know, whole cities were destroyed. And as that was recouped from and the civil rights movement came into place, then people began to integrate, but there was still a glass ceiling maintained. And there was this separation of community where they were stratified into classes and the people of the lowest class within this separated community became the food, the economic resource for other systems, the prison industrial complex systems and other kinds of systems. And then, you know, I'm only speaking of this from the perspective of looking at how the long-term goal being implemented by the craft workers or the wizards over a millennia of time can lead us to a system, a place where we are now in the world where everyone is involved. So it's not just about the Aboriginal Indigenous Americans who were genocided to take the land. It's not just the Aboriginal American and African peoples that were enslaved in order to work the land and to bring profit to the overall wizardry class, but that everyone in America at this point has been folded into that dynamic. There was a time when the corporations actually appreciated their workers and looked after their workers, and because they recognized that this is where their profit was coming from, the worker, the work being performed. And those old corporations were taken out through an era of corporate raiding, which happened in like the 80s, where investors would come in, buy companies, break them up systematically. We went through this era of corporate raiding where all of the really stalwart companies were destroyed. And then out of that came this so-called free trade agreements, which allowed the workforce to be moved to other poor countries that didn't have labor unions, and finding new venues where people can be exploited for their low wage kind of slave labor. And so we're seeing this come full circle now, where as countries rise up and claim their own sovereignty from sort of this corporate raiding on an international scale, which is how I see these, this movement for free trade. It's free trade because you are freely taking other people's energy and resources without giving recompense. So that's what makes it free to the class at the top, which I call the craft class, the ones who are using spirit magic in order to enact these things. And so so we're ensconced in a system that has moved through the exploitation of Aboriginal people, Aboriginal lands, into the more expansive exploits of including everybody as a fundamental resource. So the human resource becomes every human being, every worker, despite whatever the color they may be or the class they may be. Systematically, every being becomes exploited into this system as some kind of function that is providing wealth and resources to the economic classes behind the scenes. I won't say at the top because they're most often not visible. And so it's really important for each of us, as certainly for myself, as I look at this huge movement that was created to play out over millennia of time, thousands of years, really. I would say it started, the whole process started somewhere in the 1700s, and I believe it's connected to what we think of as the sort of the Renaissance era, that era of enlightenment, where this kind of, at least the current epoch of the hijack began, you know, moving into other regions of the world, creating a stratification of humanity in a way that disregards the value of people who are not of your class. I see that as being really escalated in the Enlightenment era, you know, through the British Empire and the Spanish empires and all those empires. At any rate, what we're living in now is really an extension of that. An extension, well, maybe I should go back to the Roman Empire because maybe that's where it all started. At any rate, on first blush or first glance, it seems like it's extremely overwhelming in terms of the magnitude of what's going on in our world and what we are bound to deal with. And I'm simply connecting this now to my first part of the story, which was about the imagination. Now, the people who are, who we would consider to be the controllers, the 1%, the wizards behind the curtain, have enacted this whole epoch scenario based on their will and their imagination and their ability to implement these systems globally. So from my perspective, the way to unravel these systems is not to try to confront head on playing that game, but to unravel it from the perspective of within. And this is because the system, as it has evolved, the whole wizardry system of planetary control enacted by the 1% beings that I call the craft wizards, is to just pull out of the system because it depends on programming of our mind and our innate capacity so that we get plugged into that system. So it feels a little bit like the movie The Matrix, in which you see the symbology of Neo and, you know, starting out in this little pod in which he's asleep. And energetically, he's plugged into the system. So they dump the food into his body and whatever chemicals are sustaining his physiology. And they're extracting his energetic electrical force in order to run the system. Well, this is kind of a metaphor for our modern humanity. There's a way that all of us walking around in this world are actually not quite alive. We're walking around, we have sleep cycles and waking cycles, but we're not really the master of our being. We are plugged into the system. We go to school, we learn the history as it's told to us. Is it true? How would we know? We go into work and we get plugged into whatever those responsibilities are, whatever work that is. Is it ethical? It may not be. Is it ethical to be creating a chemical that's going to be toxic once it's into the environment? So people have gradually been separated from their ability to discern what their own ethics are, and from the ability to create something that is sustaining, because they've been so degenerated by our world culture that they have to be desperate in sustaining their own life. And then layering on top of that, you know, the false education, the systems of employment, there are the religious structures that separate one from their core, that separate one from their ability to be their own, to be the I won't say master of, but to be the consciousness, the sovereign consciousness within their own beings. So there's a way that we, walking around in this world, are the sleeping dead or the walking dead, in that we are walking around, engaged in life, having relationships, having babies, all this, but are completely severed from the true power that we have within us. And we are severed because we are that energetic resource that is being funneled through the 1%, the what I call the craft wizards. So they've constructed a system that allows a few to benefit from the many. And we not only are tapped into it as a human race, we fight for it. And so this leads us to be very, very confused. It really does. It leads us to be very, very confused. And what we need to do is tap back into the prime resource and take that back. And that is the only way to collapse the exploitative system within which we live. So to me, that's not overly complicated. It's something that we can definitely do, because it's not conditioned on anything that's going on in the environment. And as we move into that rewiring of our own internal systems, our greatest tool is going back into that state of original imagination and creativity that was part of our childhood experience. So the idea of growing up from childhood to adulthood in the ancient days, say in the times even predating the civilizations of Egypt or predating the Mayan civilization, what led into those civilizations was that children were guided through an excellence or an excelling or an understanding of accessing their core internal powers. So once you bring your attention to what is flowing through you already, then that gives you the power to create something in your world. So the danger of confronting externally this beastly system that we're living in is that it's designed that once we get pulled into that external confrontation, we immediately get compromised because we become part of that violence, part of that control system. And so the idea is to separate from that control system first by connecting with the divinity within yourself, of understanding the compassionate approach, the forgiving approach. This is really the power in those things. It's not a weakness. It's not a saying it's okay for all this horror that has transpired in the world. It's just really a taking back of power in a way that doesn't compromise the self. Because when you go out there confronting as a warrior or an aggressor, you become compromised into the system and can be controlled, like terrorism. What is terrorism? It's a person who's reached the end of their limit, end of their rope, want to confront and change the system, have determined that they'll do anything, and at that point is when they get compromised, because then they become weaponized within the system. If you look at all these terrorist groups, they're funded. They're propped up. They're literally weaponized by our own industrial medical military complex. So getting to the end of your rope is really the worst thing that can happen. You become like some of these new left groups. I don't know what Antifa is, but I do know where they show up, there's violence. So I would suspect that that's a group, or there are fragments of that group that have been weaponized. And so we have to be very careful about moving into that realm of violence as a form of confrontation, but rather move into that form of internal balance that allows us to unplug from that system and then recreate systems for our own existence, so that we're not in that survival mentality and we understand that we're plugged into a resource that is infinitely powerful. And that's really what connecting to the self provides. And so as we learn to heal and become healers and become new creators in this world, we have to be very mindful of connecting to our core systems, our core abilities and capacities, and to be watchful of when we're being drawn into a system of mental, psychological, spiritual, and emotional violence. That's really the tools that are being used by the craft wizards. They're using the same capacities that we have as powerful divine beings, and breaking through the mind to get control of our innate powers, and then using those, that energy, to create this insane world that we're living in. And however long it may take to deconstruct the madness, we have to do it through a divine system and not through the violent system that has been constructed around us. And So this is an important part of our consideration and our discussion, and it is a lot of what I work on, you know, on a larger scale and write about and receive insight about. Because when we tap into that core imaginative power we have or had as children, the idea is to not slip something into it, a fantasy into it, but to awaken that power and open it into that divine capacity to intuit, to communicate on a much grander scale with the divine essence of our being. So I'm going to, you know, that was a lot, I think, probably to absorb and take in. But it's, I really do see that as a way and something that we can begin to work our way through this pathway. It's really what spirituality is for, what it's about. It's tapping into our true nature as beings. So I want to share with the time that I have left a little bit of things that I'm writing. I'm working on a larger project, so I open myself to stream of consciousness, and that sometimes comes out in prose, in ideas, in understandings. Sometimes comes out in poetry and a more creative way of expressing knowledge. And sometimes it comes through in actual technology, techniques on how to heal the body's energy system through different kinds of practices. And in that way, those things are woven into the actual healing process of what I do. And the writing is about healing the mind, healing the connection of the soul of the truth to our living experience. So I'm going to share a few things with you in the time that's left. And this is a piece that came through. I say came through because while I am the vehicle writing it down and I am the essence of the generation of it, I experience it as if I'm opening into and a facet of my being that is far vaster, far wiser than the construct of my mental space, which is in large measure, like everyone else, programmed. Programmed to feel inadequate, programmed to feel helpless, programmed to feel hopeless, programmed to feel desperate, programmed to feel a sense of lack. So we have all these program systems existing embedded in our mind that are booby traps. So, you know, there's a way to heal that, and we're working on healing those things. But you could also open through the internal door that circumvents the programming of the mind, and you can begin to weave into your existence the spectrum of your being that was never here in this planetary system. The soul is that. So it speaks to the soul. Pleasure and boredom. I experience both the pleasure and boredom of being completely awake. Not to claim there are no more potent expressions of wakefulness. Like everything, there is a spectrum to its reality. Nevertheless, I am awake. Moment to moment, living in the act of awareness. Cognizant and open to that which is operational within my existence. The drops of rain, the scent of my cat's butt, the sound of traffic, the rivers of feeling coursing through my veins, the thoughts that impose and threaten to control the tender moments by casting its net, a fissure of the soul. Even time, that which does not exist except through illusion, delusion, or imposition. The voice of multiple existence in complex spectrum, interlapping and influencing the design in the act of creation. We are the past. There is no future just yet. There are no gods except of our own creation. Now, for me, that is the totality of this poem, Pleasure and Boredom. And I would say, even as I was reading it now, that this is not the program, a poem, that is an expression of my life as Catherine Davis on the planet, or the plane of Earth, depending how you think of it, the dimension of Earth, the density of Earth. But rather, this is a poem. It's a soul poem. And it's about the experience of being a soul and being cognizant of everything and seeing the vastness of the influences and how they play out. And at the same time, being aware of the minutest of details, like each drop of rain. And so there's a vastness to who we are and to what the soul being is and has knowledge of and has capacity to comprehend. So what I'm suggesting is not that we, in our earthly experience, have those same capacities, but we do have is access to those capacities through that internal awareness being that the soul dwells within us. Perhaps not the full vastness of it, but there is a portal, a spark, a reference, a opening, a capacity to communicate and understand what this vastness is. And as we surrender and let go of the control systems around us, the fears. Fear is really the incarcerator of humanity, fear of this, fear of that. And when we begin to open that internal portal to our vastness that exists in us and beyond, then we can sort of surrender the controls because we have no control. Our only control is that which we've been programmed to do, through the education system, through the religious system, through the political system. And it's a craft. It is a witchcraft, if you will, a wizard craft. And this is why our minds have been broken. Like the slave in a slave cabin who once was a king in Africa suffered through the breakdown of its soul and inserted in place of that natural connection were these controls. And we all suffer from it, no matter our race or class. And the only way to remove ourselves from that system is through this internal wisdom and connection to the vastness of our being that is able to look upon the whole spectrum of influences and feed to us an appropriate navigation through the system so that we don't rely upon these systems of control, of self-doubt, of all these things that are like viruses in our mind. We can not turn to that. And as we grow that muscle, that strength internally, connecting to our soul space, the vastness of who we are, then we are navigated in such a way that we, while we may be still the captain in the driver's seat, we're just getting better quality information on how to guide ourselves, to navigate ourselves through our relationships with our families, through our economic needs, through our psychological, spiritual needs. We're just, instead of beating ourselves from the visible world, or some might say the external world, we are nourishing ourselves from the power of our soul wisdom. And the reason it's necessary to follow this path of your personal soul wisdom is because a lot of the mechanisms of control are also being operated in the invisible world. And we'll talk about it another time. It's why I call it the craft wizards, is because they've taken the true divine power we are as beings, and through their craft have reversed that force so that it drains from us into these systems. And what we need to do is to cut off the food chain. And it's not a question of attacking it aggressively, but simply cutting off that food chain by reconnecting internally to our true power. And that really is the work, the spiritual work I'm speaking of when I speak of consciousness, spirituality, and health. I'm talking about re-empowerment, reconnection to the force of our true power, and allowing the false connections, the external hijack of our systems, to simply wither with the absence of our energy and the absence of our individual support. We have to empower ourselves, each individually, on behalf of ourselves and humanity's good. Anyway, we're out of time. You've been listening to Heart of Mind Radio for the New Millennium. I invite you to come to the website, prn.fm. Look up Heart of Mind Radio archive page. You'll find links on that page to connect to various resources and events, healing potentials. I'm basically connecting with the work that I do. I'm Catherine Davis, spelled K-A-T-H-R-Y-N. You can link to my various sites on that archive page on the Progressive Radio Network, or you can go to heartofmindradio.com to make a connection. You can email heartofmindradio@gmail.com. Thank you for your attention, and may your day, your week, your life be blessed and guided for your highest good and well-being. Bye for now.